Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This podcast is able to continue because of the support of listeners such as yourself. If you want to support Decoding Westworld, all you got to do is go to patreon.com/DaveChen. Any amount is appreciated, but if you kick in $10 a month, you can get bonus episodes with Siddhant and I questioning the nature of our reality. Again, that's patreon.com/DaveChen. Thanks so much to everyone who supports Decoding Westworld.
They are experiencing God. Problem is, God is bored. Bored.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding Westworld, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Westworld. I am David Chen.
I'm Siddhant Adlaka.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone. What we do on this podcast is we recap, spoil, discuss, speculate about every week's episode of Westworld. This week, we'll be discussing Season 4, Episode 5, Zhuangzi, I think is how you pronounce it in Chinese. Zhuangzi, I think. But we'll probably just pronounce it Zhuangzi for the sake of making it easier to talk about. Again, Season 4, Episode 5 of Westworld is what we'll be spoiling and recapping. You can always find more episodes of this podcast at decodingwestworld.com. Email us at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Before we get to our thoughts on this week's episode, let's take a look inside the mailbag at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. We've got an email that came in from Robin from London in the United Kingdom. Now, before we read this email, I just want to make clear, I don't think this email is true, what I'm about to say in this email, but it's fun to reflect on. It's fun to reflect on, okay? This email comes in from Robin. He says, what if there was sexual tension during the war years between Caleb and Maeve? And what if that tension were realized? Maeve says she'll give him something to live for after his gut wound, and it's easy to assume that she means a dose of limbic daddy daycare. But what if she meant that literally? What if she actually gives him a child, and what if that child is Frankie? There's zero reason to assume that Mrs. Caleb, Uwadi, is Frankie's biological mother, and on Westworld, zero reason to assume often means we should assume the exact opposite. In fact, it's just as likely that Frankie, and ergo C, is the child of Caleb and Maeve than Caleb and anyone else. It would explain why Hale is so interested in Caleb. He's one half of a double act that created a new species. Hell of an outlier act. Thoughts? End quote. Okay, so what Robin is proposing is that Maeve, a machine, was somehow able to give birth or maybe create a host version? I don't even know what really Robin is suggesting, but like, I don't think hosts can reproduce in this world. What do you think, Siddhant?
Well, given what happens in the episode that we're about to talk about, it wouldn't be too out of the way for something that Blade Runner-esque to really happen, now would it? And also given the fact that I made that stunningly accurate prediction about Frankie in the future, I'm not going to rule anything out. I don't All believe right. it myself, but let's wait and see.
Completely fair, completely fair. Well, you can always email us at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Now, the episode title, Zhuangzi, what is that, Siddhant? What's going on with that episode title? Tell us.
So it is the name of a Chinese philosopher from the 4th century BC who is known for, among other things, his quotes on Tao. And Tao, before we get into it, is the process of reality itself, the way that things come together. And what Zhuangzi said was, what can be known or said of the Tao is not the Tao. It has neither initial beginning nor final end, nor limitations or demarcations. And this is the important bit. Life is the ongoing transformation of the Tao. Life is the ongoing transformation of reality.
Got it. So how do you think that applies to Westworld, Siddhant?
Well, for one thing, it's a show about questioning the nature of your reality, which comes back a whole lot this week in ways that I found delightful. And since he talks about ongoing transformation, that also brings to mind what Charloris seems to want for her quote-unquote species, the act of transformation, of growing, of becoming something else, of perhaps even transcending their reality. Mm-hmm. So I think there are some implicit, if not fully explicit, connections there.
Totally fair. Totally fair. Well, let's talk about the episode itself. Overall thoughts, Siddhanth, on season 4, episode 5 of Westworld?
I don't know how you feel about it, but this is my favorite episode of Westworld till date.
Wow. Out of the entire first 4 seasons, this is your favorite episode?
I think it might be. I think it might
Wow.
be.
Wow. Why is that? Any reason specifically?
Well, for one thing, the music is incredibly propulsive. Mm-hmm. And for another, everything that happens in the episode, almost everything that happens in the episode, matches that propulsiveness. And this episode is sort of like a soft reboot for the season. Mm-hmm. Because so much of the season thus far has been, you know, hinting and telling us like, well, you know, you don't really know what's going on yet. And then after last week's reveal, this is the show laying everything on the table and telling us, here's where we are. Here's what's going on. Here's what our story actually is. Now, would I have liked if that were maybe something earlier in the season rather than more than halfway through? Maybe. But at the same time, this is what we will look back on as Westworld Season 4. The one that is about the things that we saw in this episode, the things that were introduced in this episode, the moral and emotional dilemmas that came up first in this episode.
Fascinating. I really like the episode, and I agree with the concept of this being a reboot. It almost feels like this is the season that should have been season 3, in my opinion, right? Like, they wiped away a lot of what happened in season 3. Season 3 did give us some things. It brought us outside the park. It did put Caleb and Maeve together. But really, the story that I think the show was always destined to tell is what happens when robots break out of the park and then take over humanity, right? That's kind of what this season, this episode is like establishing as a new premise of the show. And it always felt like where the show was kind of headed. And season 3 was this weird diversion that like they even season 4 has largely erased in many ways. So I like the episode. There's some really cool, beautiful moments in the episode. But I'm also still mildly frustrated that they haven't revealed a little bit more about what's going on with this Christina storyline. You know, like we're still kind of guessing as to what's actually happening there. So some people might have figured it out, but like I think there's still a few mysteries as to what's going on. So let's get into it. Mm-hmm. Let's start by talking about let's cover the Christina storyline. I think that will be probably the quickest. Then we can take a little break and then do the other stuff. But Christina in this episode wakes up.
Does she? What?
What you tell me. You tell me, Saddam. What do you mean by that?
No, I kid. I love that every time we see her, you know, she's fast asleep and she's waking up. Because it is in a way about, you know, it does harken back to the repetitiveness of season 1, and she is living out like a similar thing here in a way. So I do think it's funny, but I think it works that every time we're introduced to her, it's when she's waking up and starting her day.
Yeah. And she basically, she goes to work and has a, you know, Maya's still having more nightmares, and but she's really into this Teddy guy that she had a date with, right? So she goes to work and then gets out of work and then meets Teddy. And, oh, this is a thing, correction I wanted to make, which was, I think in last week's episode or the week before, you were like, the camera pans over and we see this huge tower where the Statue of Liberty should be. In fact, the Statue of Liberty is still there. The tower is just next to it, right?
Well, no, here's the thing. I thought that too when we first saw the Statue of Liberty. I thought, oh, was I wrong about this?
Mm-hmm.
But I also thought then, wait a second. We don't see the Statue of Liberty again after that. We do then see this, like, you know, empty, foggy space, and then eventually the tower. So I'm still not sure that the Statue of Liberty is there. It could just be what the human hosts in this new world have been programmed to see, maybe instead of the tower.
Fair enough. My perception was that the tower was next to the Statue of Liberty. That was what I remember. Maybe I saw it. Maybe I just imagined it. But anyway.
It could be. It could be. I don't think we've gotten a shot of, you know, the two of them together. So it's like the Batman Bruce Wayne thing.
You know, it's possible. You don't see them in the same room. Yeah. So Teddy basically says, "You're a god in this world." And she does a mind control thing on these strangers that she sees in the park. And so it's clear that Christina is now dictating, it has the power to dictate what the humans do in the show, right? In this reality. And then she goes to meet a college roommate, and Teddy's like, don't deviate from the plan. You don't want to arouse any suspicion at all. And she meets a college roommate, and it's in fact Charloris, or Charlotte Hale, I believe, as she's called in the show. And so they meet, they hang out, and it's a very awkward and it's an awkward lunch with sinister undertones, I would say, right? You ever have one of those meetings with an old friend from college, and then it's like they say, "I have ways of making you talk." That would basically be one of those meetings you could have, pretty much.
Yeah, you're catching up with the person who was based on your code and consciousness, but has now turned into, you know, a fascist megalomaniac. That college roommate, one of those
things. awkward.
So that happened.
So then, let me pause there. Any thoughts on, like, what's going on with Christina, her dynamic with Charloris?
It's nice seeing roommates catch up.
Record scratch. You're probably wondering how I ended up in this situation. Anyway, yep.
Thanks, David. I was fascinated when she showed up, because I really want to know why Charlotte or Charloris is checking in on Christina. Is it because she is, you know, suspicious of Teddy awakening her to the nature of her reality? Or as there are some lines that seem very genuine, some inquiries she makes, some questions she asks, and things she says, like, "You deserve to be happy." Is she just, does she want a friend? Is she checking in on, in a way, the person she used to be or could have become, or someone she feels connected to in a way? Because we're not entirely certain who or what Christina is just yet. My assumption is maybe this is Dolores's former body, code, programming, something of the sort. Something to do with Dolores, because she keeps, you know, trying to write Dolores' story. But yeah, I think it's a fascinating question given everything else we see of Charlotte or Charloris in the rest of the episode.
I'm going to put this out there, Sinanth. I don't know if the stuff between Christina and Charloris is actually taking place at the same time as the other events of this episode. I'm just putting that out there.
Can I ask why?
Well, it's not that I strongly believe it's not, but it's more that it feels like a game that the show would play, that you think they're happening at the same time, but they're not. We have no explanation for what Christina is yet. Like, is it a human body? Is it a host body? What Teddy's doing here, etc. And also, you know, Sidonth, to get down to brass tacks, she's wearing a different outfit than she is in the earlier scene when she's making all those people dance. So maybe what we're seeing is like an early version of, you know, like when they're still working out the kinks with the tower, maybe. And Christina is somebody who's helping to author these storylines, but they haven't figured it out yet. I don't know. They're probably taking place at the same time. But I'm just like, I'm not ready to accept that, because the show has played so many games like that on us in the past, you know? So
you're questioning the nature of your reality. I get it.
Indeed.
Do you have any
updated theories on what Christina is or what's going on there at this point?
I'm still going according to what I thought back in episode one, that, you know, something must have happened to you know, the original Dolores's body, or the body that she inhabited at the end of the last season, which is, I guess, the explanation for why she looks the way she does. But again, you know, this being Westworld, there could be 100 other explanations for it. But now my question is...
I think that what we do know from this episode, it seems as though Christina is not human in this. Like, she's not a human in the way that the rest of the other humans are humans, right? Like, the other humans in the New York area have been infected by fly mind control things. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Christina is able to control them, right? So either Christina is a human that A, doesn't have mind control flies, and or B, she has the mind control flies and is able to like manipulate them to broadcast to the other mind control flies to change what they're doing, or C, she's a host, or D, she is a computer program that exists in some kind of simulation that's like authoring the things. But she's not human in the same way that she's not, you know, she's not under the control of the other flies, right? Like the way the other humans are, right?
Yeah, I think it's at the moment, I'm probably going to, you know, regret this later. It's as simple as she is a host who has the ability to, you know, send some of these signals or whatever it is to control these people's narratives. But this episode did make me wonder what really was going on with that Peter guy who kills himself. I'm starting to think that it was an old narrative she wrote for a different character, a different person that unfolded years ago, maybe decades ago. Mm-hmm. And they're just like repurposing some of her stories for the newer humans, like rebooting people in a way.
Right. I mean, again, go back to Westworld season one, right? Like Christina or Dolores blended the past and the present, right? So maybe we're seeing her doing that, Christina doing the same thing in this season, where like she thinks that something that happened a long time ago actually happened today, or vice versa.
And just so that I'm throwing every possible theory out there, maybe Christina is Caleb's daughter. I just have to try. I have to try. Just so we can revisit this and say I was right if it happens.
Here, another possibility is Christina is the cryogenically frozen normal human on which the Dolores host was based.
Sure.
I got to throw that out there. But I think if I had to guess, I think we're in some kind of simulation still, because everyone is like in the behind the scenes footage and all that stuff. Everyone's referring to Christina as a human, right? Evan Rachel Wood and all the people are referring to her as a human. And it's just like the show is tricky and it does sleight of hand. But I just don't think the show outright lies to us in general. Like, it would be unlike them to just outright lie to us about who Christina is. You know what I'm saying? So anyway.
Okay.
We'll see. Okay. So then Christina is able to mind control her way out of lunch, right?
Who don't we all wish?
Yeah. She makes these waiters like have a conflict in the background, and then she's like, I gotta go. And so then she leaves, she goes to work, and the boss, she looks up Charlotte Hale, and Charlotte Hale not found. Then she looks up Dolores Abernathy, restricted, and then she's clearly triggered something that she's not supposed to see. The boss comes in and asks her, "Have you ever questioned the nature of her reality?" And says that she's already strayed beyond the walled garden. Christina's already strayed beyond the walled garden. What do you think is going to happen? Like, and that Charlotte, Charloris, he says she already knows you've gone too far. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Who is she? I assume Charloris, right? And then he like says, you know what happens to people who do this? And he kind of threatens her before she tells him to freeze, and then sends him home to his partner, and then asks him to reveal to her like what the walled garden is. And then she sees this whole miniature holographic map of the city where she can see basically everyone and what their storylines are. And that part is like all super cool and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes clear that like Olympiad Entertainment is like somewhat behind this whole mind control. Like, it is where the mind control is being managed somehow, that Christina is architecting these narratives that are being part of these humans' lives. Any other thoughts on this whole sequence?
So I think it's really cool that Westworld has now kind of gotten to a stage where it can, you know, if a plot hole, so to speak, comes up, it can be explained away just based on, you know, the whole reality thing or the character's perspectives. Because my question while watching this interaction with the boss was, wait, why is he being so weirdly explicit about all this? Like, have you questioned the nature of your reality? You know, so-and-so knows and walled garden and this and that. So at first I thought, why now? Why is this boss saying all these things now that could be interpreted this way, that seem to break the reality of this world? But then it also occurred to me that from Christina's perspective, it's only now that things are happening around her and interactions are happening around her that seem weird, that she's begun to question. So it's not so much a matter of how the lines are literally written as it is a matter of this is how things have started to sound to her. That mm-hmm. everything that is said now hints at some kind of additional layer to reality. So that's just the way I read the scene, especially the second time I watched it, because I thought to myself, okay, this is how she now has started to see things.
To be fair, she did have that stalker guy earlier from episode one and such, right?
Well, that too. But, yeah, that'll do it.
There is a final scene where she talks to Teddy and is like, what's going on here? And she says, who did this? And who built this? Who did this to me? And he says, you did, right? So I think what is being established by that line is that Charloris and Dolores are the same person, and that this version of Christina is some, like, obviously Charloris built the whole city and the whole infrastructure that they are seeing, but that Charloris has somehow birthed or created or set this Christina situation up, right, is what is being implied by the Teddy interaction at the end.
I think it was left kind of vague in an interesting way that I can't wait to see unpack next week. And I haven't looked at any, you know, previews for the next episode or anything. But I took that line to mean possibly one of two things. That you, literally you, Christina, yes. This version of you, you are inadvertently responsible for this. Because she is, you know, without necessarily knowing, controlling these people in a godlike way. Whether or not, you know, how much of a hand she had in creating this world, don't really know. But the other interpretation of that line I had was a version of you, a version of Dolores, a version of her that is now Charlotte Hale. So I think it's a line that is intentionally obscure and comes wrapped in a lot of different meanings. But I do want to point out something else about that scene when she first looks at the tower. And this doesn't factor into whether or not I think the Statue of Liberty is still there or still isn't there. But the way the tower was lit and framed, it kind of looked like a hand holding a torch. And I thought that was just a very sinister way to frame the tower.
Kind of a Planet of the Apes reference style, a little bit.
Perhaps? Possibly, yeah.
Yeah. Well, great point. But yeah, I think those are solid ideas as well for what she might be saying. And it certainly lends credence to this simulation theory, right? Like if she is in a simulation and Christina is responsible for the simulation somehow, like she is. But again, we'll find out more in next episode. That's why it's a little bit frustrating. I wish we just knew. It's kind of when you're watching Westworld, you're guessing what's actually going on, right? You don't know who this Christina is. And we've now been guessing for like five episodes. I hope we get some resolution next episode. But it's been fun. It's been fun to be on the journey with this character.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we move on, Sedan, let's take a break and talk about what else that you have been working on. Anything else? If people enjoy our scintillating discussions here, what else should people check out in terms of your work?
Nope. Sorry, the movie Nope, which I've reviewed over at IGN, which I really loved. So definitely watch the movie if you can safely on a big and loud screen and then read my review at IGN.
All right, check out Sedan's Nope review. I want to give a big shout out to A Cast of Kings podcast, which I've just relaunched this last week, and we have a couple episodes up on the feed getting you excited for House of the Dragon, which is going to be debuting on HBO on August 21st. It's going to be a lot of fun. I have a new co-host. Check out the podcast A Cast of Kings to learn who the new co-host is and to find out what House of the Dragon is going to be about. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man. Thanks. All right, let's talk about the other plot lines. So, the episode begins with William giving a voiceover, kind of an inversion of Dolores giving the voiceover. There's beauty in this world. There is an order, a grand design. Love Ed Harris giving a good monologue. You know, what a talented talented guy. And then William is talking to a couple, and he basically reveals to the couple that they're, hosts or human bot control, like human fly controlled people. Like, what was your interpretation of what was going on there?
Oh, absolutely. It was that. I've taken to calling them human hosts. I wish there was a neater way to delineate just verbally host versus human host.
Fly but
I've taken
humans, to call them
fly humans, fly people, the fly people.
Fly peeps. Fly peeps.
Fly boys.
Fleeps.
They're fly
fleeps,
boys.
As it were.
Fleeps. We're getting way too close to the center of this maze. We're about to figure it out. So the fleeps. No, the human hosts. I'm gonna have to backtrack there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The human hosts. That's fine. Seem to believe that they know William and they have for some time, but in a scene that is almost similar to Leonardo DiCaprio sitting down at a cafe in Paris with Elliot Page in Inception, these people actually don't seem to remember really how this conversation began, or who William is. But rather than it being a dream, it's the fact that they have just been very recently, within the last few minutes, programmed to see him as an old friend. And they are in denial about it when he first tells them this. And, you know, the two actors who play the couple, they don't appear for too long, but they do a fantastic job of selling the sense of, like, disbelief and confusion.
Right. Yeah. And it actually reminded me of something you said last week, Sidonth, about how do we know that the world wasn't created last Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. And I actually texted you when I watched that scene. I was like, holy shit, that's like very similar to that concept that Sidonth brought up about, like, for these people, the humans were they were basically like brought into their storyline began last Thursday, you know, or at the beginning of this conversation, right?
And similarly, like, there's no world in which Christina and Shaloris actually went to college together, but she remembers her as her roommate. Yeah.
So then Clementine comes in and says, hey, we need your help. And they go to this person's house, a colleague whose appetites have become unsustainable. It's a great sequence, like super spooky, great buildup. The woman is like covered in blood. It's like, wow, super creepy. And like, you're just trying to figure out what's going on here. So a kind of classic Westworld opening, but also just like a great opening filled with some interesting horror tropes. But what we find out is that this was a host who intercepted with a human that it was an outlier. Now, in season 3, they defined outliers as humans who would disobey or be unpredictable, that Rehoboam could not understand what their algorithm was. You know, like Rehoboam couldn't predict what these outliers were going to do. That term has now been repurposed, I think, because there's no Rehoboam in this season. And it now denotes humans that don't follow their fly programming.
No
anti-fleeps, as it were.
Anti-fleeps. You know? Yep, let's do it. Anti-fleeps.
Yeah, so
let's call them floops. You have the fleeps and you have the floops. All right. This is what the podcast is now.
Yes. So she was scheduled to transcend next week. Mm-hmm. This character Hope was scheduled to transcend, but she intercepted an outlier human, and the human kind of introduced all these crazy ideas into her head, and then she just started going on a killing spree, as you do, right?
As one does, yeah, of course.
As you do. Anyway, awesome opening, like awesome concepts being introduced. Like, any thoughts on the opening before we get to the rest of like what's going on with this plot?
Yeah, another reason I love this episode is because even though it doesn't give us these answers up front or any real answers, it is introducing us to a whole new world. I have a terrible singing voice. A whole new world where that look, despite what William says, it clearly has rules of some sort. It has a hierarchy. It has a morality of sorts. And even though William says, well, we don't have rules, but, you know, I'm going to have to, I don't know if he doesn't say like he's going to have to punish her, but the implication is, well, now I can do whatever I want to you, you know, because there are no rules. So it's almost like this vengeful thing. And so it kind of establishes that they want to do things differently from the way humans did them with their supposed no rules thing, but they're also bound by human instincts and impulses and things they can't fully explain yet.
Yeah, and I think that's what obviously Charloris goes on to explain in this episode, right? So we now learn what's going on. Like, why? The question to ask yourself is, if robots have taken over the world, or at least New York City, right? Why would they continue to inhabit mechanical bodies and intermingle among the humans? Mm-hmm. And Charloris attempts to explain that with this creepy scene, right, where she is able to force people to dance and carve ice sculptures and play music against, not against their will necessarily, but like to the extent that their physical bodies are breaking down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a cool moment where she kind of, you hear like the music change frequency, and then she's still talking to William while the world is still going on around them. Really cool sound mixing. I think what we're supposed to take is like she's communicating to William in a different way that the humans can't understand in that sense, right? Yeah. And she says basically like the problem is God is bored, and I think what we're meant to take away is that this place is, quote, a place to indulge ourselves with the humans, end quote, right? It's a place to have fun, to just let it all hang out and chill out a little before you, quote, unquote, transcend. And I think the idea of transcendence, like, what do you interpret as transcending in the context of the show?
So I'm not 100% sure yet, but we do see later on what appears to be one of the hosts transcending where they're, what is a brain ball thing called again?
I think brain balls is fine as a term.
Brain balls. One host has his brain ball removed and placed in some kind of humanoid-looking vessel that isn't supposed to function like a body. I think it's more symbolic, which is also interesting in its own way. And I think they are, you know, mingling in their own form of, you know, the, you know, like robot afterlife that we've seen already or something like that. Because my interpretation of when they say transcending, and based on a few other things that Charloris says, is they are transcending the physical form. They are transcending their human forms.
Yes, because if you are AI, if you are artificial intelligence, you don't need a physical form. You can be a being of pure energy that lives in a computer. Why would you want to unless you want to, you know, which is, it sounds like is what a lot of the hosts are doing. They want to stay with the humans because they're bored, they're addicted to it, they like it. I will say, I love the sequence where she forces everyone to dance. I wish that we had a better sense of, like, the humans are basically have no affect. Like, she is able to control them so well now that they have no affect. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, makes them very similar to hosts. I wish we got to see, like, that the humans were, like, fighting it to some degree. Like, we saw the guy his hands were all bloody, like his fingers were all bloody, but he doesn't seem to be in pain at all, right? Mm-hmm. I think it would be more interesting if they were actually in pain or there's actually some indication that they're humans. Otherwise, they're just basically functionally hosts. You know what I'm saying? So that was a little bit of a disappointment with this vision of the human-controlled world. So
I do understand that, especially because last week we got to see Caleb fighting it from his point of view, the original, you know, Caleb. But I think, you know, I'm willing to forgive it for this episode just because it's one that we are getting almost entirely from a host perspective. And that, you know, these humans have been, you know, living like this for so long and conditioned for so long. I would say, like, you know, most of the humans we see seem to be, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years old. So for the majority of their lives, this is all that they've known. So they would at this point be, you know, since they were probably kids when they were first fleeped. Is that what we're calling it?
they were fleeped. Yeah, fleeped is great because it's like fleeped almost.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my God, it is. Totally intentional. It's because, you know, this has been a lifelong thing for them. This is all that they know, essentially. But
yeah, but, you know, but wouldn't they still experience pain and, you know, like, anyway, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll learn more about how the fly control works in the future. But yeah. Anyway.
Well, we do briefly see that one lady fall down because she hurt her ankle, but it's not the same as, you're right, it's not the same as the guy with the bloody hands.
They clearly have, like, physical limitations that the hosts don't have, right? Yeah. So that's clear. But
I have to say, I love when she just yells chair.
Yes.
And three humans just come and, like, form a chair for her. Because coming into this episode, if you remember last week, we had questions about what her motivation is. And I thought it would be cool that she just likes to mess with people. She just likes to torture people. And so coming into this episode, before I watched it, I started wondering, is she a sadist? And wouldn't it be an interesting question to explore? Like, how would sadism function in the context of a host? Of artificial intelligence? Where would it come from? How would it manifest? And we see elements of it in this episode, especially with her, that she is so bored and so vicious that this is the kind of stuff she's pulling.
Yeah. If you are able to say chair and then three people converge on you and form a human chair, that's when you've made it. Like, that's when you have achieved what you need to in life. I hope one day to get to that point, you know. Just have people follow me around and I say chair and then the chair. That's it's a very aspirational situation she's creating is what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
It reminded me of Xerxes in 300 when he walks off his platform and I think there might be slaves. They like form steps beneath him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just joking, by the way. Slavery is terrible.
thanks for clarifying. Oh, gosh.
moving on.
David uncancelled.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. so moving on. There's a bunch of things we learn about the whole system that Charloris has created in this episode, right? We learn that there are, I think, hundreds of outliers, if I'm not mistaken, right? And that basically... this is like normal. There's going to be spoilage in the crop. Like, no program is ever going to be perfect. And I think that's a great accepting attitude that Charloris has for her own flaws. You know, awesome attitude to have there. We also learned that this killing spree thing has happened multiple times when it's hosts that have intersected with human outliers is what's been going on, right?
Yeah, and then...
So hosts have intersected with human outliers and then as a result gone on killing sprees, and that this is not the first time it's happened, right?
It is the 38th time. Yeah.
And then she also is really unhappy with the host version of Ed Harris and his inability to, like, fix this problem, you know? Yeah, go ahead.
I felt so bad for host William. Like, until now, he's been this ruthless, vicious murderer, kind of, you know, like what she becomes. But, Ed Harris, he gives such a heartbreaking performance. He's like a wounded animal because I think he just wants to live up to his potential.
Yes.
And I'm saying that in complete seriousness. He just wants to live up to his potential.
He just wants to be the ruthless killing machine that he was designed to be.
Yeah, but then, you know, Shaloris tells him, well, you know, your original was better and like stuff like that. And he just, oh, he gets to this point where he looks like he's about to cry. And it is such a heartbreaking performance in such subtle ways.
Indeed. I agree. He's great as usual. And then she says, well, at least you can handle this one job. Take out this outlier for me, okay? And we also learn, by the way, that they're not supposed to talk to the outliers.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you break protocol if you talk to the outliers. This is what causes the killing sprees, you know, so don't talk to the outliers. No, it's like, don't feed the Mogwai after midnight. Don't talk to the outliers, right?
Mm-hmm. So there are rules after all.
So then at the same time that he's going to kill this outlier, Stubbs and the Asian boss man, Jay, are infiltrating the city. Now, I did want to call out, Jay is played by very talented, very awesome actor, Daniel Wu, who has appeared in...
Stubbs is played by the best Hemsworth. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay, yeah, thank you for clearing that up. And then Jay is played by Daniel Wu, who's appeared in Into the Badlands and is a total badass. So there's an amazing moment when they're trying to influence, and then all of a sudden he's like, something's wrong, and then everyone turns around. That's like, that moment sent a chill down my spine. Mm-hmm. And is just really, really well executed. It was better executed than everything that came after that, because it's completely implausible that those guys would be able to get out of the situation by pushing their way out. My guess is, Siddhant, that there's probably like a different version of this sequence where like they mowed all those people down by shooting them. And the people behind the show were just like, it's probably in an era of like massive gun violence in the country. They're like, maybe we shouldn't have like three people like killing 50 mind control humans. You know what I mean? Is my guess, like, either in conception or maybe they even shot it, but like, What we ended up with is literally they just pushed their way out of it. They like ran and pushed their way out of it, which was like a little bit disappointing, I think.
Yeah, something's missing there, because the sequence starts with what appears to be, you know, some kind of hand-to-hand combat, and then it goes to the rooftop, and then by the time it cuts back, you know, all these people are on the floor. And I thought to myself, well, I would have liked to have, you know, seen that fight scene. But now that you mention it, maybe that was the rationale, that there were...
Maybe,
you know,
there's like a bunch of gunfire, and they're like, hey, it's hitting too close to home to have like... Yeah. One person mow down like 30 people with a automated weapon or something like that.
Yeah, I
have no idea. But I will say, even though it makes what ends up happening really implausible, because you see like 50 people like converging on them, and it's like, how do they get out of this? Probably I would have preferred this to having like one person kill 50 humans, you know, with a gun. Like that probably, I probably didn't need to see that in Westworld. So I am okay with the choice, even though it does feel a little goofy as a result. So
what I will say is I don't necessarily think that the show would have gone there. And I think a missing hand-to-hand combat scene might be more plausible, just because would these characters be killing other humans so willingly?
But didn't Jake shoot a bunch of people at when he's escaping with the woman? I thought I saw that.
I don't think so.
I thought I saw like someone shooting some people, but maybe I just
I could also be mistaken.
So okay, but you're right. Like maybe they don't want they think these are actually humans, and so they don't want to kill them, right? So that's another reason why. And so they show us a little bit of hand-to-hand combat, and they're like, you know, but I don't. It was weird the way it played out. That's all I'm gonna say.
Either way, it feels like something's missing.
Feels a little bit weird. And that's the problem, is you have a setup of 50 people turning and looking at these people. That's mm-hmm. like such an awesome setup. And then like the payoff was like not as good. But that's a hard setup to pay off well. So anyway, let us talk about... the outlier lady, like she can actually see the tower, which is weird because most of them can't see the tower, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, Christina can't see the tower either. Right? Yeah. So is she a fleep? Anyway. Okay. So, and they have this kind of like tender, the woman, the outlier woman and William kind of have this tender moment before Jay comes in, shoots William, runs away with the woman on the boat. So, Okay.
Gotta collect myself. Sorry.
There's a final sequence between, like, William confronts the real, like, host William confronts real life William, which is kind of cool, right? Mm-hmm. And he kind of has this an existential crisis in front of real William, basically. And real William is having a blast. He's like, looks like you reached the center of the maze. Maybe it's time you question the nature of your reality. Dun, dun, dun. And so I think it's a cool idea, and I think it's playing out interestingly, which is basically you have this host William who is better in some ways than his human predecessor. He can make three holes in one. He can kill more efficiently. He can run faster and kill harder and do whatever. But there's something that's still missing, an essential piece of the human puzzle that makes real William what he is. And so host William is getting really frustrated that he can't live up to that. And I think, you know, having this kind of dialogue is an interesting way of exploring that. Any thoughts on this whole storyline, this William interaction? Yeah. Any thoughts on that whole situation?
Yeah, I think we're going to see these two Williams, I don't know, team up or something
team
like
up.
That. But either way, maybe I'm thinking too many steps ahead. But
my question is, what does real William's throat look like? Because
I know.
It just being held together by that piece of the bio suit he's wearing, or is it repaired at this point? That's my question.
It's been like 30 years, so I think it's probably been repaired in the 30 years that he spent frozen and asleep. But no, I think what essentially does separate them, you know, maybe there are some nuances in the programming, whatever. But what does separate them is, you know, the original William was the man in charge. He marched to the beat of his own drum. He was the one ultimately making all the decisions for himself. And, you know, in an overarching sense, Westworld is a story of free will. And this episode brings up the fact that the William host may not necessarily have free will to the same degree, because as he says, this is her world. This is Charloris's world. He is subordinate to her. He was made from her programming. And then if you take that in the context of a god and its creations, you know, he is made in her image and is subservient to her whims. So I think that is, on some level, probably in the vicinity of what the difference between them is. And I think the lady on the rooftop.
The outlier.
You know, even though what's going on from a technical standpoint is two totally different things, where she is a human who was controlled, who is somehow slipped out of that control and can see the tower and is questioning the nature of her reality. You know, he is a host, right? So completely different things. But at the same time, they're in a similar emotional space where he has, on some level, begun to question, you know, what am I? What am I doing? You know, like, what's my purpose? Who am I if I'm just a reflection of another host, another human? And, you know, what is the real nature of my reality if, you know, these terms are being dictated to me? So in an emotional sense, they're in the same place.
Any other thoughts on this episode, Siddhanth?
I love the way that William, host William, develops from the opening to the closing scene, because he gives essentially the same voiceover, and there's a case to be made that he is actually saying it in both cases. But either way, you know, he goes from opening this being a controlling, borderline sadistic bastard to this sort of lost, wounded, you know, person, robot thing. He has a very William-esque journey, let me say. He goes from being season one William to, you know, William kind of paranoid and questioning who he is. I believe that was that in the second season?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yes.
Yeah. So he has almost that entire two-season-long arc in one episode, and it's very convincing. And I went from hating him in the opening scene to really, really feeling for him at the end of this hour.
I agree. Ed Harris is great, and we are blessed to be able to have his work in the show. So, loved it. It's worth pointing out what we didn't see this episode, right? Is we had no, there's two, you know, two big things that were absent from this episode. No Caleb, so no follow-up on, like, what's going on with the Caleb host version in the future, and, like, when that is even happening and what's going on with that. And also, obviously, no Bernard and Frankie and what's going on with Maeve. Like, were they able to reanimate Maeve or whatever? I assume we're going to find out next episode, so.
Yeah, and we still don't 100% know if all that stuff is contemporaneous, which is a little annoying. But, you know, I'm sure we'll find out soon enough.
Indeed, indeed. All right, well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Decoding Westworld. Thank you so much for watching. Thanks to all of my patrons at patreon.com/DaveChen for supporting this podcast. DecodingWestworld.com is where you can download this show as a podcast. DecodingWestworld@gmail.com, how you can send in feedback. Sidon, thanks for chatting today, as usual, man.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you next week for another recap of Westworld.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.